Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. It's Wednesday morning here on KSJE, and it's time for our monthly conversation with the superintendent of schools with the Farmington School District. Dr. Eugene Schmidt is here in the studio with me this morning. Good morning, Dr. Schmidt.
Good to be with you, Scott, and thanks for the cup of coffee.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Good to have you here, and happy Thanksgiving week to you and staff students of Farmington Schools.
Yes, I want to celebrate with this Thanksgiving week upon us.
Very good. Well, let's talk about some of those things, about what has been going on, and school year is still going well.
Yes, let me share that when you reflect back over already almost 80 days of school, it is just a really nice story. You know, certainly, you know, we wondered a year ago, would we be remote? Would we be in person?
Right.
We are in person. You know, I will say that over 500 kids have chosen to be in a remote world, so people do have options. But when you look at all the learning that's taking place, we've had a great athletic fall, and
true,
you know, for all of our high schools, and the, you know, what's exciting about from Thanksgiving to Christmas is all the winter concerts that are coming up. So there's just really a really good feel in the air. And one of the things that I, you know, I'm excited about is we wondered a lot, would kids come back? You know,
right,
a lot of kids enjoyed,
sure,
remote at
right,
home learning,
right,
and so it was with interest. And so we're really pleased that on paper we actually have over 11,000 kids, but when you count them for funding purposes, they're counting as full-time equivalents. And so, you know, we have, for example, a preschool kid, and we have several hundred,
uh-huh,
you know, actually only count as a half for funding purposes. And so when you look at over 11,000, almost 200 people or kids, you know, that translates into 10,958 complete,
gotcha,
parts of people.
That's your official enrollment number, I guess, right?
The official, and that was the 40-day count. And
okay,
the 80-day count, which is around December 12 or 13, if that count holds, you know, the school district, because it is a number higher than we had projected for this year, you know, we would stand to get about another $800,000 in funding, and that is important because we're always looking for ways to add more teachers, to increase the number of program offerings. So it just is a really, really nice bit of business. And then,
right,
and as you know, we've had Principal Pam Schritter and celebrated the blue ribbons, but lots of other kinds of things are going on that we celebrate and what our community would know. So you get to be the scoop guy today.
And we love that. We love that when that happens,
and
Dr.
that's
Schmidt.
That,
yes.
The district has qualified for a number of Ben Lujan maintenance repair awards. I'm always proud of the work that Ted Lazowitz is our chief operations officer, but you know, his lieutenants are Steve Vollmer, Charles Vandenbrock, and happy Thanksgiving to all the maintenance custodial, but they keep our buildings alive and well, and they've received any number of awards this year for that. And what's exciting for the Farmington community, it just happens every year. You know, I've been here 7 years, and seven of these statewide recognitions, and what it comes down to is attention to detail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a work order goes out, something's broken, needs to be fixed. You know, the state is interested, is it ever fixed? But then how quickly,
right,
is something put back in order? So, you know, I appreciate the 2021 Ben Lujan Award, and it just is a feel good for for the school district.
You bet. Well, congratulations. And again, that's a, I mean, you have a lot of buildings that that your folks are keeping in good repair. Many are newer buildings, I think, than they were when you got here 7 years ago. So there is that part of it as well. But still, I mean, I think anyone who's been into a school or remembers going to school, they get a lot of wear and tear just from being there and with all those little feet and hands and everything else running over them every day.
Yeah, it is exciting because I have played a part, you know, certainly Farmington High, Hermosa, Northeast, you know, have all been, you know, constructed during my time in the service of the district. But
and even Tibbetts, not too long before you got here, as Tibbetts, I recall.
Yes, but, you know, certainly part of that is the systems improvements, and we're going to talk about systems improvements here in a few minutes, but the work that we did at Country Club, McKinley, McCormick got some improvements, and we're not done. So this is all made possible by the community's support of our schools.
True.
And we thank our community for their vote yes on the recent general obligation bond. So I'm really pleased, would love to have you share some of the bond statistics.
You broke them down by districts, which I thought was interesting, right? Yes, to see how the votes came in all the districts of Farmington schools, right?
Yes.
And so congratulations on the passage of the bond. And that was, I think, important. We talked about that on this program, that the money will be spread around to a lot of schools. A lot of playground improvements, as I recall from that conversation, a lot of other maybe HVAC stuff and things along that line, right? Is that on the list?
And so I want to say that not only is every – so these districts 1 through 5 for people who maybe are listening, not viewing.
Right, our radio audience, yes.
Yeah, we're having a statistic that shows District 1, and District 1 is the south east portion of town.
Okay.
And I brought a map that maybe somehow if you can hold it up while I talk would be an amazing bit of business.
I might be able to do that, but that's pretty, yes, I got it.
It's all nicely colored, but basically we have 5 different districts, and this is based upon where the school board members represent. And so District 1 is southeast. They had 688 votes, 60% plus.
Right.
District 2, 582 votes, 56%. Mm-hmm. District 3, which is kind of central south, that was 621 votes, again 61%. District 4, 912 votes, 56, almost 57%. District 5, 1,039 votes, and again, almost 58%. So not only did all 5 board districts vote yes, we have precincts that each of these are divided into. And maybe you can just kind of give a little picture of the precincts.
I got it.
You know,
okay.
You can go online to the county and see these, but literally it shows, Scott, that every precinct across the district voted in support. So
there you go.
Really, really proud of our community.
I'm not going to be a hand model ever, Dr. Schmidt, but I'm doing my best. But yes, sir. Thank you.
But it is just such a wonderful statement for all of the Farmington school district, and something like 50 or more different precincts, 5 different school board boundaries all voted yes. Tells you the community loves their schools. They appreciate the work that we talked about Ted Lazowitz and his maintenance crews are doing to maintain these buildings.
Right.
And the confidence that we will have to continue to keep those buildings alive and well.
True. And a good message, I think, to your school board, too, right, to hear that they have support from the voters throughout the district, not just certain neighborhoods, I guess.
Yes, it is.
What it says to me. So, very good.
So, I'm interested in just talking a little bit about, so what happens because we pass bonds and the community has given us $8 million that we will use over the next 4 years. We have targeted improvements, and certainly one of our promises to the community is that we wanted to make sure that all of our elementaries had improvements to their playgrounds. And so that's always exciting.
Right.
But there's things that people sometimes don't see, and those are the HVAC systems. You know, people don't go crawling up on the roof, so they better not be. But there's a lot of things that will be happening is what we will call infrastructure or systems improvements that that we have planned for the use of that money. But what I think the community will be very excited about is passing the bond gives us the power to leverage bond dollars for additional improvements. And so we are going to the state and asking for about another $9 million, because just as we get America Recovery Program monies and CARES money from the federal government, so did the state.
Right.
And the state wants to invest heavily in infrastructure, roads, bridges, and schools. And so we will be asking the state to give us additional monies that we can use to accelerate some of the programs for the future. And again, we have a long list, but Apache Elementary needs heating and ventilation roofing. Bluffview will be looking at that. I'll use you one more as a hand model. But so if you can just kind of show the community that we're really interested having an understanding of how much more we can use if we take our local dollars, match it with the state, and do twice as much. And so it's going to be an exciting next couple of years as we look for ways to accelerate school improvements so that the conditions of kids are better. You know, certainly in a world filled with COVID, we've learned a lot about better filtration systems for particulates in the air.
Right.
We've always interested in improving the kinds of almost touchless water fountains. And so there are things that we can do to improve the quality of the school environment that we'll be looking at. So just be ready. And this all culminates probably in January. So people will really be able to follow along. We'll be organizing a 5-year facility master plan.
Okay.
And as part of that plan, it is what might be the next schools that we build. And so again, I'll let you be the first person to have knowledge of this, but we think that there's an opportunity in the next couple years to accelerate the replacement of Heights Middle School. We'll be looking at Apache, maybe Mesa Verde Elementaries, and also we'll be looking to do some work in preschools. And so if community is interested, we're going to be forming a facilities master plan. We're interested in community input. You know, this might be your chance to help us decide what is the next big project, along with, you know, what are the smaller systems improvements that we can be making along the way. So it's going to be an exciting time.
Interesting. And those schools that you mentioned, I'm trying to remember, maybe, and you may know how old the majority of those buildings are. They've had additions over the years, of course, but those are now your oldest schools in the district, are they not?
Yeah, when we look at specifically Heights and Mesa Verde on College Boulevard, you know, those were early 70s.
Okay.
And a lot has changed.
Some of us don't think that's too long ago, Dr. Schmidt. Other people may think that's forever ago, so I understand, yes.
Yeah, I think that.
But as you do the math, that's 50 years ago plus.
Yes. And to kind of put it in perspective, you know, some of our grandparents in the community went to Heights and Mesa Verde. Their kids went there, and now the grandkids are going.
So, yes.
So while from my perspective, where geologic time is an eye blink.
Right.
This for others. Heights. Well, we just built that, didn't we? No, it's like the early 70s.
Right.
Well, it's changed.
And we don't want to leave out Apache, because I think that's been there for a long time as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those folks, I know the teachers and the students love their school, but sometimes these buildings don't age as well as we'd like them to. And so that's why they're on the list to be looked at.
Yeah, decisions to be made.
Okay. Very, very good. We want to talk a little bit about vaccinations for the school year and what is regular and required. It's not just the COVID vaccine, which we hear about all the time in the news, but schools have been talking about vaccines forever, it seems. Even when you and I went to school, we had to have vaccines to go to school.
So I appreciate that, because, you know, my first plea to the community is that there are those traditional or, you know, regular kinds of vaccines that you and I grew up with. Polio, for example, measles, mumps, rubella, typhus, and other diphtherias. But there's a whole, it seemed like a train load of different shots that we typically would be giving to our youngsters up through about the ninth grade, different shot regimens. And so it saddens me, Scott, that in this time of vaccinations, it's kind of become the anti-vax mood. And even shots that we were traditionally expecting of children. And so they're
that have a super long track record of safety, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And so, and the fact that I think you're right, that some of this conversation about the COVID vaccine has leaked over into just the other vaccines that we've all been taking and have normally immunized our children to go to school, to be able to hang out with other kids. And it really hasn't been an issue until recently.
Right. And curiously, going or shifting into remote learning seemed to have played a part in that, because the parents seemed to, when I talked to people, so tell me why. Well, we're in remote learning and we don't see anybody, but the law is still the law. Rules are still rules that we're wanting to follow. So as I look to the future, and the future is second semester, I will be sending out letters to those parents and guardians of children who are in our district that haven't completed what are the time-honored kinds of shots. I'm not here on the radio espousing, you know, get your COVID vaccination. That's a parent choice. But,
right.
But the state rule is that, you know, there are numbers of shots that you're expected to have. And so that is my plea, is the law says you can't be in school
without it,
without these shots. And, right. and I have gone to the public education department. They've given me the grace. I've given that grace to parents, that I understand that, you know, hospitals are busy with COVID cases, but still there's an expectation that kids need their childhood immunizations. And so if I can have you go to the next slide.
Yeah, there's a lot of places to go to get them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a lot of places, and certainly everybody has a personal physician, but there are clinics in town. And if the parents, if you'll call me or respond to the letter that I'm about to send, you know, I can work with the Department of Health and maybe have just a vaccination day, you know, for the MMRs or the Tdaps or polios, you know. Polio, you know, some people are still not getting their polio vaccines, and I worry for all of my kids, and
sure,
and I'm asking the parents to help me on this. So one more slide, and
about these letters, right, that you're going to send out.
As parents and families, you do have choice, and I want to say that if it's religious, if it's you know, the medical exemption, there's even a conscientious objection. And so, you know, there are reasons that, you know, I'm ready to work with parents, mm-hmm. but I need to understand, and the answer can't be, well, my kid shifted to remote learning, or I just haven't had time, or, oh, I forgot.
Yeah,
you know,
doesn't work.
I bless the hearts and I thank all of my school nurses. I talked to them before we went on break, and I said, so I'm not understanding this. And they said, Gene, we have called the parents, we've sent emails, we've done robocalls, we've done letters, and still I'm down to about 125. And so, you know, good for you if you're those, you know, 10,800 who have, you know, completed or compiled your immunizations, but I'm putting in a plea to those about 125 kids,
right,
who are still not fully vaccinated by those expected childhood diseases. And so a letter will be in the mail probably sometime in December, saying that I will give you till January to work with me on this, and then January we might have to look for different solutions. But I'm ready to help if I knew what I needed to do to help.
Understood. And I think that you said it very diplomatically, Dr. Schmidt. And I think, you know, we've been hearing a lot about, you know, people's personal choices.
Yes.
And I understand that, and I think you understand that. But then there are consequences to some of the choices that we all make day in and day out in our lives. And so I guess that would be maybe the next shoe that would drop, would be what are the consequences for parents who maybe still don't get the message, or And that may be their child cannot come to school until they figure this out.
At some point, there will be the hard choice. You can be allowed to stay in school, or you will be asked to not be in school. And again, the public education department has been very gracious as we navigate COVID first.
Sure.
But in the end, there's a parental responsibility to help me with the childhood vaccines.
And right. So, but you're not even talking about COVID vaccines. No. You're talking about the other ones
we've been doing.
And for the greater good of all your students.
Yes. And I think that's an important point, and I appreciate you sharing that, is because I have a responsibility to protect all of our children.
Those 10,000-plus students.
Yes. And so, as you say, I'm not here talking about COVID immunizations. I'm here talking about the Tdaps, the MMRs, the polios. There's just a number of things that we have been doing, since time began. Even back to the 70s.
That's right, the 70s. Yeah, exactly. But they are well-proven, effective vaccines, and they help keep the whole student population safe, and that's kind of the point of this. So I appreciate you talking about that with me this morning. There's another issue that's coming up, which is about social studies and social studies standards. This is something the state is looking at, correct, about programs and teaching methods and criteria throughout all the school districts. Is that true?
Yes, and I appreciate you bringing this, because it not only is a local question, apparently it's become a national conversation. And I feel good about that. Conversations are healthy things.
Right.
In this case, the New Mexico Public Education Department is going through a review. They're calling them a new draft social studies standards. The last time we had social studies standards, it was about 29 pages back from 2004. About every 10 to 15 years, whether it be math, science, social studies, music, the state reviews the standards, the state standards by which we think are important. These become somewhat controversial because people have labeled some of the language or phrasing in this as some kind of critical race theory. And I've written my community, I've spoken. Farmington doesn't teach critical race theory. We do.
Please repeat that. Would you repeat that for me one more time, Dr. Schmidt?
And with seriousness, yes, Farmington does not teach critical race theory. In our social studies standards, we try to teach history based on historical fact. We want to honor our tradition. We want to honor our diversity. And we welcome the conversation about what social standards or study standards could look like.
Right.
So what I'm here to share is that on November 12th, the state did have a public hearing. It went on for several hours. Farmington Municipal Schools, on behalf of the district, I wrote a 6-page letter talking about some of the concerns that we had as a district that was based upon. We had a 2.5-week opportunity for my staff to review the 122 pages and offer their critiques. I took the thoughts of my staff. In my own readings of the document and conversations, we did submit some concerns. And so for our community, our next step is in the January school board work session. I believe it's the 14th of January. We are inviting New Mexico Public Education Deputy Secretary Gwen Perea-Warnament to give a briefing to the board on, so what's happened from November 12th going forward with these new draft social studies standards.
Got you. And I just want to just double check. You said January's meeting. Our graphic says December. Which one do you think is?
Yes, let's stay with December till I know better.
Okay, sorry. But
I like the 14th. So December 14th. Let's go with that.
More sooner than later.
Yes,
is what we're thinking.
Yes.
Okay.
My thinking is that yes, we want the community to have a chance to listen to the board converse with Deputy Secretary Perea-Warnament on the standards, how the thoughts that we have contributed might impact change, sure. revise. And so, yes, so I'll stand by your correction. December 14th, okay. week session, which okay. begins at 3:45, and that will be both in person as well as Zoom.
So, okay, folks can access it remotely if yes. they so wish. And can you summarize some of your concerns, some of the district's concerns that you wrote to the state about with these new standards? I mean, are they vastly different from what's being taught already?
Yes, and yes, and in when you go from 29 pages to 122 pages, there's a lot more depth.
I see.
And part of the depth, I'm going to visualize a matrix. If you go across the top of your matrix, there are six columns that I will call anchor standards. And traditionally, you know, there would be things like civics, government. It might be, Eastern, Western Hemisphere kinds of things.
Okay.
But in the new draft, there are two new anchor columns, and one is for cultural heritage and identity that seem to be some people's concern for critical race theory. It's not.
Okay.
But we have questioned.
That's new.
But we have questioned the name of that column. You know, in my essay I wrote, it could have easily been, culture or diversity. The when you start throwing in identities, people become concerned. So anyhow, okay. and there's also an anchor standard that is inquiry, and inquiry is when people have compelling questions that they're curious about. In my view, I in spirit of disclosure, I'm a history major, social studies minor is part of my degree. So
right.
I think I carry some level of storytelling in this. Is that I believe that inquiry should not be a standalone, but embedded within what I think should be the four traditional kinds of social studies standards. So there's an anchor standards that I would like to pare from six down to four.
Mm-hmm.
Going down, I'll call it the y-axis, going down, there's what they call performance standards. And so you have anchors, and then you have, how do you do that anchor? Well, you have a level of performance or demonstration of understanding.
Right.
I share the concern that some of those performance standards could be written better because if we're going to do inquiry, don't tell the student what the answer should be. And I'm thinking of one that said, due to an inequity of differences between North and South, slavery was the cause of the Civil War. And I'm thinking, don't say some inequities or inequalities, allow the student, let's study the Civil War and let students draw conclusions, because certainly slavery has a big impact, but so did states' rights.
As a cause of the Civil War,
federalism right. versus states' rights.
That's right.
And it seems to
and
be.
And that's long been part of the conversation, at least in my history, so in classes, yes.
And so I would welcome the students in their discovery of, the economics and the philosophy, the music, and what was going on in the time, even the immigration patterns, to say due to an inequity that in my mind creates a bias.
Mm-hmm.
And so I probably had 15 or 20 examples where they used a word that I thought already drew a conclusion. And so
got it. Right.
And so I want Farmington kids to be critical thinkers, be consumers of knowledge by being able to identify resources and then come to a conclusion. And so again, my criticism a number of times was, don't tell the kid the answer, allow the kid through their own exploratory study through inquiry, the methodology, which, you're a science major, you'd have done the, your theory of action would have been a hypothesis. So let the kids draw their own conclusions. And so.
Gotcha. And that sounds to me like another reminder of local control, maybe, to the public education department, that they can set these somewhat generic standards and then let the local schools kind of figure out how to teach to their kids.
Yes, and so that's that should be the exciting part, that, you know, what happens next for Farmington at some point in 22 or 23 school years, the state will say, now it's your turn.
Okay.
And at which point Farmington, so I'm looking at 22, 23, maybe 24, is when we create our own studies. You know, we develop our pacing guides, we develop the lesson plans, we choose the curriculums. So all of these the community will be involved with. And I think it begins with that December 14th meeting with Secretary Perry Warnament that we can talk about. So what happens next? When do you turn it over to us? And what can we do? And so I appreciated your comment. I think that there's going to be a lot of local control in how we take these and turn them into Farmington's standards of learning.
Right. And so just to be clear, your teachers aren't going to be teaching these standards next month, no. Next 2 months, next 3 months. We're still a little ways out, aren't we,
yeah.
as they're formulating what this is going to be?
Yeah, I think
just so parents understand.
Yeah, my thinking is it may well be the school year 23-24.
Okay.
Because we'll be looking in 22-23, they'll be looking at, so, you know, first, do we even have the resources to do what 122 pages of standards are asking us to do? You know, and then, you know, we, as a district, we tend to chunk down what are the major themes. You know, I remember talking to a kindergarten teacher, said, Gene, we have 122 standards. We can't teach 122 things in 175 days. Well, you choose the most critical content. And so we'll spend some time looking at critical content, chunking it down, developing themes, you know, then the pacing guides that go with that.
Sure.
Then how do you assess the learning? So there's just a lot that takes a whole year, much less to choose, you know, can you find the curriculum pre-K through 12 to that even has these things,
right,
you know, as defined by the state. So it's a long look out.
Understood. Very good. And my guest this morning, Dr. Eugene Schmidt, is here, of course, superintendent of schools with the Farmington School District. We are almost out of time, Dr. Schmidt, but I thought we would end on this other important note, I think, about testing to stay. And we will talk about COVID vaccines at this point of the program, just for a moment before we can have to go, but just a couple of minutes left.
So I'll be really fast. Yes, and thank you for that. We as a Farmington Municipal School spend a lot of time talking with Public Education Department of Health to say, how can we keep kids in school? Parents are calling, I want my kid in school.
Right.
I want your kid in school. And so
isn't that what we heard all of 2020 is to get kids back in school?
Yes, get kids in school. And then as soon as COVID came, I had to send them back home on quarantine. So a new thing that we introduced just before Thanksgiving break was something called Test to Stay, that if parents will work with us, you know, we can do a rapid COVID test that within 15 minutes shows if you have COVID or not. And we're testing kids to keep them in school rather than quarantining them. So it's exciting because the first day was like 12 kids. By the fourth day, we were over 40 kids who tested because their parents wanted to keep the kids in school. So we're ready. I have something like 4,000 test kits.
Okay.
And so, you know, we have all the nurses are trained. We are good to go.
So does this help maybe solve part of the problem that if a kid is in a class with another kid who has tested positive and maybe they're sniffling, they could be, that sniffling kid could be rapid tested and be able to stay in school?
Two different kids, yes.
Yes.
And so when if a student is exposed to another student, because we learn of exposure because mom calls and says, my kid tested for COVID, he was in school yesterday, those other 25 kids in yesterday's world, congratulations, I'm sending your kid home for 10 days. But now it is, but if you allow me to test that child on day 1, 3, and 5, which would, you know, you're exposed. So mm-hmm. Scotty's in the class.
Right.
And I have COVID, you've exposed. On day 1, you can test. And if you test clean, you get to stay in school.
Right.
And I'll test you on day 1, 3, and 5. But
to make
but
sure.
Yes. So okay. Suddenly, you know, as an example, the week before, and I'll be really fast, the week before I had 143 kids on COVID quarantine. Now I can keep all those 143 that test negative.
If the parents say you can, and give further permission.
That's correct.
And that's what you're asking
for. It's all parent permission. So thank you for letting me share that.
You bet. No, and I think that's, because I've heard that that's a somewhat of a concern, complaint from parents that say, well, my kid isn't sick, but he had to go home because of their proximity to a kid that was sick. And so this helps to, I guess, alleviate that and keep the child in school.
Yes, and I'm excited because, you know, we can use this same test for our athletes and our activities. So with all of the concerts and things coming up, you know, I can test to stay.
Right, and that's an important thing. So folks will be hearing more about that, I assume, here in the weeks to come.
All with parent permission.
Right, very good. Well, Dr. Schmidt, always a pleasure, of course, to have you here to talk about these important issues facing kids and education and Farmington schools. I thank you, as always, for coming in every month, and happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
And you as well, and our community.
No kidding, that's true. Thank you very much. Dr. Eugene Schmidt, my guest this morning here on KSJE.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.